Hello, my name's Guy Somerset, and I'm the books and culture editor of the New Zealand Listener. In this podcast, I'm going to be talking to Chris Burke, winner of the People's Choice General Non-Fiction and Overall Book of the Year prizes at last year's New Zealand Post Book Awards for Blue Smoke, The Lost Dawn of New Zealand Popular Music, and now convener of the Five Strong Judges panel for this year's awards, the finalists of which were announced this morning. Good morning, Chris.
Hello, Guy.
To start with, I just wanted to get a sense of how many entries you had to wade through this year and what the overall nature of the entries were. Was it a good crop?
Oh, yes. Well, things seem to have bounced back after last year. There was a slight dip, I don't know if that's recessionary or whatever, but last year there were 154 and this year 166 entries in the four categories, which is almost exactly what was the number of entries in a couple of years ago, which was 169. So we had 166 books to look at. And where the lift has been is almost exactly in general non-fiction. There's 67 there. The other categories are pretty much exactly what they were the last couple of years.
And as a judging panel, were you a collegiate band of judges, or were there some divisions over some of the books or some of the categories?
Oh, there was, well, of course we were collegial, we're all civilised people, but yes, and of course there was debate, because we're all people of strong opinions and passions and different tastes, but also hopefully bring a bit of expertise to it in our different areas. And you find that it balances out, that where one person is an expert in poetry or fiction, and they can be a good general reader in non-fiction, and vice versa.
That's a lot of books, obviously, to have to read, although in some earlier years, I know it's been well into the 200s, but the lower number of books, obviously there's fewer being published, but also do you think that publishers have perhaps been a bit more selective about what they put in? Do you think they were putting in the right books overall?
There's a surprisingly lack of complete duds. Really, there in the self-published line, or the memoir that's really written just for the family, or the publishers really aren't wasting their time putting rubbish onto paper. You find, in some of the categories, our long lists were, quite substantial, giving an idea that there was a real strength in those categories. Some of the categories, the standouts were so obvious that the long lists were very, very comparable between the five of us. So, yeah, there's some really strong publishing there.
And any e-books this year? They were starting to come through last year, I know, more so this year, but any e-books?
No, none. I think any e-books would still be represented by actual books. They wouldn't be e-book exclusive.
Yeah, I know that this year with Penelope Todd is doing an e-book only imprint, so perhaps next year we'll see those start to peek through, but as you say, not yet.
One thing I noticed in general that could have be e-book relevant is just the different levels of production values, which is one of the things we have to consider. But you wonder if, because of the e-book being on its way, some publishers are really going for broke on the lavish production values. So the book as an object is the thing that people want to buy. They just don't want the story. They want the object, the beautiful book. But at the other end of it, there's a lot of cost cutting, which I think with some books that really have been underdone to the same extent that some have been almost overdone with the bells and whistles, Yeah, there's some that is really just bound Xeroxing. If it's regarded as a specialist market, let's not spend too much on this. But at the other end, the popular history, say, or the fiction that I think will have a good crossover market, they've done some beautiful book production.
And it's interesting in the general non-fiction and the illustrated non-fiction categories that sometimes, you know, some of the books there you could almost see in either category because so much attention has been given to the production values on the general non-fiction.
Oh, exactly. And just to explain what the difference that you keep in mind, the simple way of putting it is with general non-fiction, the text is the leading aspect of the book, whereas with the illustrated nonfiction, the text supports the illustrations. It's the overall graphic quality of the book, and the text is the supporting element, whereas in general nonfiction, the illustrations support the text.
Right. Perhaps we could just go now through the various categories, starting as the awards do themselves when they release everything, with poetry. Good to see poetry being put first somewhere.
Yeah.
Talk us through the three finalists, and just first of all, perhaps, though, just tell us a little bit about the standard of entries overall here.
Well, it's reflected in the number of books that were actually discussed that we were pleasantly impressed by the number of good books in the poetry, the 24 books, and certainly a good 10 of them would have been seriously discussed. And the thing with the poetry is it needs to... to win an award, you really have to stand out. There really has to be something dazzling there. Needs to be more than just a sense of accomplishment from the poet. You know, the book needs to work as a complete whole. It doesn't need to be thematically connected, but, you know, not just a collection that's been put between covers, you know. There needs to be a feeling of this is a poetry collection and statement at this time from the author, and hopefully more than a creative exercise, you know, so that there's a lot of heart in there as well as the intellect, you know.
Tell us a little bit about each of the three, just a couple of lines maybe, about what appealed about the various book set.
Sure. Well, the most well-known, the most longest established of the three poets is Dinah Hawken from Wellington, and her book The Leaf Ride has many moods to it, and it covers things like the political as well as the personal, family, the wisdom of age, and she plays with format quite a bit, and there's some pretty dark themes in there, like war and European issues come into it. It's managed to be both lively and unsettling at the same time. It's it's very very strong collection from Dinah. And also well known is Anna Jackson with Thicket, and this collection really displays her usual delicacy. You know, she almost has a naive persona to her poems, and there's a lightness of touch to them. What I love is, you know, they're quite philosophical, but there's also a lot of humour to them. You know, there's a lot of layers to Anna Jackson's work. And the more of a recent arrival is Rhian Gallagher with Shift, and she manages to... she writes with a lovely elegance and also mystery. There's a subtlety to her work and really expansive use of imagery. There's real polish to her poems, so it's great to see a comparative new arrival amongst two people who really have got a body of work behind them.
And just a quick nod towards another new arrival, the Best First Book Award there to John Adams for a very innovative set of poems, Briefcase.
Oh, well, this is quite a knockout, the John Adams. So John Adams is a judge, and this book it's almost like a graphic novel as much as a poetry collection. He connects his love of law and poetry, and the poems are all connected. There's a narrative behind it, and he's really, it's like watching a high wire walker taking extreme risks and he plays with form throughout. You know, there are kind of fake documents and puzzles, and the use of typography is very creative. But he still manages to pull. It's not just all a flamboyant exercise. Does that, as well as the experimentation, there's a lot of heart to it.
Now, moving on to the fiction category. Firstly, how many entries were there for that one?
Oh, for fiction, 27 entries, which is pretty much this last year, 26, the year before, 26. So that's stayed pretty static.
Now, there would have been at least two strong contenders in there. Sarah Quigley's The Conductor and The Larnax from Owen Marshall.
Yeah.
Both books which people, before they knew the outcome of the shortlist, you would say to me, oh, yes, I'm looking forward to seeing Sarah Quigley's The Conductor on there. And I had to sort of bite my tongue and say to myself, don't tell them, because neither of those two books are there. Tell us about the books you've gone for.
Well, we've got two short stories in there, two short story collections which might surprise people, and they are by Fiona Kidman, with The Trouble with Fire, and Sue Orr's From Under the Overcoat, and the one novel amongst the three is Rangatira by Paula Morris. There are some really highly regarded writers that aren't there, but you know, when you're looking at 25, 26 books all at once, it's different from reading a book on its own. You know, it's different from reviewing a book on its own. And as much as you might enjoy many of those books, I mean, 13 of the 27 books were actually mentioned on people's long lists. That gives you an idea of how many books really stood out. But you know, when you're looking at things together, you find that there are things like you've got to make judgment calls of how credible are the characters, is the dialogue convincing, is there a compelling narrative all the way through. That kind of thing is where you have to make a judgment call against one book against the other, you know, 25. But and that's what we found with these three books.
The Sue Orr book there is a very bold, audacious collection.
It is, yeah. There's real virtuosity going on there with the short story form. She has taken a great risk of connecting her stories with classic short stories from international writers over the last couple of hundred years. And the links are pretty slight, you know. It's the more you know about them, maybe the more you get from it, but really they read convincingly on their own, you know. You don't have to have read James Joyce's The Dead to know what the story connected with that is about. And they're not all set in the eras or places of those original stories. I think it's almost a mistake to place too much on that structure. I mean, it's a clever idea, but the stories work on their own. They're elaborate, and the pacing is really strong, and the character's believable. She's really, it is a very bold idea that she's run with there.
And Paula Morris, tell us about Rangatira.
Oh, yeah. So this, we found pretty compelling from the start, really. It's an unusual character. He is a chief who's looking back on his life. He's considering this tour of England that took place in 1863 with a tour party of Maori leaders. And she evokes the time so well. Auckland of the both the 1860s and the 1880s, when he's looking back, you know, at that earlier period, and also London, the idea of the Maori tour party going over to Victorian England and how they were perceived, how they were used, and the book is kind of really fully imagined and consistent right the way through, and it's got a real heart to it. And so, you know, she really catches this Paratene as a fellow considering his life in a really philosophical and wise way.
And finally on that short list, back again, Fiona Kidman, with a thematically linked, in a way, set of short stories.
Yes, I was really pleased this came through because it's too easy to... you've got to judge the book that's on the table, you know, not I haven't liked it when I've read or been told about judges saying, oh, well, this isn't their best work, you know, when they're considering the work of well-known names, because to me that's not relevant. You know, you're only looking at the book that's on the table. You're not judging their career. And so for Fiona's book to come through, it was a delight. It was the way that the stories are interweaved that, well, got me in particular, and showing these men and women under really difficult circumstances and the social perceptions of what these characters are doing, the social judgments that of the prevails of these various characters. And I love the way that there are some stories with historical characters in them, but also some are really as current as going down to the car park at the warehouse, you know, of a present-day New Zealand. But there's also a lot of layers going on. There's a reason that the book's called The Trouble with Fire. That's a little motif that goes right through the books, right through the stories. As with Sue Orr's, you know, there's a lot of layers going on in these stories.
And you pointed out at the beginning, two short story collections in there. Bold short stories, famously said not to sell, but these were the kind of two most cohesive books for you. You know, two of the most cohesive books in the submitted books.
That's it. I mean, you know, as a judge, what's your primary concern? It's about literary excellence. It's, you know, is this book going to last? You know, it's not a popularity contest. It's not, you know, the short stories books might not be what retailers would have chosen, but, you know, that's not what the job we were asked to do.
The Best First Book Award there, Hamish Clayton's Wolf, I could have easily seen that indeed in the final shortlist overall. That's a strong book.
Indeed, that's really strong. Let me just... see where I've written what I was going to tell you about this.
We interviewed him the other day. He's a delighted young man. You know, he published that book with not especially high hopes. I mean, he submitted it with not especially high hopes. He wondered whether it would appeal even to a publisher. But, you know, it's proven to appeal to publishers, reviewers, and indeed now yourselves.
Yeah, I was really pleased that the, you know, there's a mainstream publisher, Penguin, had gone with that. And that's great to see, you know, them publish a debut like this. It's the way he just leaps in and catches this other world. The period is Tarapraha and an English sailor on board a boat in the 1830s. It's the boat that transported Tarapraha down to the South Island where they carried out their massacres. But he just leaps into this other world. It's like a mysterious New Zealand that he describes. The, you know, the flora and fauna comes out at you, and the descriptions are wonderful. There's a lot of risks taken in there. It's a historical novel, but it's not a bodice river. You know, a bodice river. It's not a sword and sandals kind of epic, even though there's an element of the the dramatic with such a character like Tarapraha.
It pulls off that great trick of both being a historical novel and in many ways interrogating the whole notion of what we take as history without being laboured, which is quite a trick to pull off.
Yeah. It's a great accomplishment for a first book, and it really stood out to all of us as a work of, you know, virtuosity. He really carries it off.
Just a quick question about the whole way the best first books are chosen. Are they submitted separately, or do you pull them out from the overall entries?
No, they consider those overall entries first, but they do, you know, you've got a post-it note saying this is a contender for best first book. That whittles down the field quite a lot, but there's no doubt that Hamish Clayton's book is, you know, is could have been amongst the finalists of the fiction award. But
and were there many debuts in there? Are publishers a bit more cautious about publishing debuts, or were there a few
see.
In there?
I'll just see.
Sorry, that's an awful question to ask somebody on the hoof.
I've got a kind of a list here. There's about 10 out of the 26 were debuts.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Whether some of them will come through with the second one, we hope, but certainly Hamish is the one that predicts a long career ahead of him. I hope I'm not condemning him to a life of servitude.
I'm sure. Well, he's writing about David Ballantyne, so I think he knows the perils of the writing life.
Oh, is he? Oh,
yes.
Yeah, hell. But look, there were so many strong books. You know, there are, you know, Emma Neal, Charlotte Randall, Sarah Quigley, Owen Marshall. You know, there's a lot to consider when there are names like that, let alone the debuts. But
yeah. Now, we're going to just take a very quick break, or rather, you're going to take a quick break, because we're discussing so many books, this podcast is going to be a bit longer than normal, so we're going to split it, and if you go and click on the podcast that you will find just below this one, you will be able to hear the second half of this conversation, in which Chris and I are going to be talking about the non-fiction categories. So we'll be back in a moment.